evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. I'm your host, John Tanza, coming to you live from Washington. Here are some of the top stories making news across Sudan, South Sudan, and the rest of Africa this Wednesday, November 13, 2014. Delegates at the South Sudan talks in Nairobi are still waiting for government representatives from Juba.
There is no formal communication on the status of the government delegation. 1 week has already been lost out of the 2 weeks that was directed from the communique that came out of the meeting of President Kiir and President Ruto.
And money for elections disappears from the office of the Election Commission in Juba.
Money was in the chest. Somebody decided to break the chest and to take that money, but suddenly the police came and he was running up and he was arrested.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Funds have been stolen from the Elections Commission offices in South Sudan's capital, Juba. The chairperson of the commission says the money was meant for activities in the states. Some sources say as much as 35 million South Sudan pounds, or about $11,000, was taken. But the chairperson of the commission says it's only 5 million South Sudan pounds, which is about $1,500. For VOA News, Dennis Logonyi reports from Juba.
An employee of the Elections Commission has been arrested for allegedly stealing money from the commission offices in Juba's Tomping suburb. A source at the Elections Commission who is not authorized to speak to the media said about 35 million South Sudan pounds went missing Monday night. That will be about $11,000. Abednego Kachul, the chairperson of the Elections Commission, however, says only about $1,500 is missing.
It is only 3 or 5 million thousand Sudanese pounds. Money was in the chest. Somebody decided to break the chest and to take that money, but suddenly the police came and he was running up and he was arrested. These are normal things to happen in any institution.
Akol Madog, the head of economics department at the University of Juba, questions how the money went missing from the office of the Electoral Commission. Madog is calling on the commission to allow an independent government agency to probe the matter.
It's supposed to be investigated because there's no way a huge amount of money can be kept in the institution instead of the bank. So the investigation should be done because a lot of money is used for a lot of things, including many activities for the election. Even if the election is postponed for 2 years, at least the process will be done to make sure that the election is done.
A South Sudanese Police Service spokesperson says he has not received an update regarding the missing money. Madok cautions government institutions against keeping money in their offices. He says the bank is safe for keeping government funds.
If there's no good place where you can put your money, then it's become a problem because sometimes even people can come and break into your institution and that's just. For this case, it is better for the government institutions not to keep money in their institution, but at least to open bank account.
In 2013, $70,000 disappeared from President Salva Kiir's office and no one has been held accountable. Earlier this year, the National Elections Commission received 22 billion South Sudan pounds from the government to commence electoral activities ahead of the December 2024 polls. The election, however, was then pushed to 2026. For VOA News, I'm Dennis Logonyi reporting from Juba.
From Juba, we move to Nairobi, where delegates at the South Sudan talks in the Kenyan capital, Nairobi, say they are waiting for government representatives from Juba to kickstart the talks. Rajab Mohandis, who represents the People's Coalition for Civic Action at the talks, tells me the opposition groups have been waiting for 1 week for the talks to resume.
The Tumaini Peace Initiative has not yet resumed. We received a formal invitation from the chief mediator to the stakeholders informing us that the talks would resume on Monday. We presented ourselves at the venue for the commencement or resumption of the talks. But until now, as we speak, the government delegation from Juba has not arrived in Nairobi for the talks. And so the negotiations have not formally commenced.
When President William Ruto visited Juba last week and had a meeting with President Kiir, both of them agreed that you are supposed to finalize the Tumaini Peace Initiative within 2 weeks. Now you're telling me the government delegation is not on the location. What are you hearing? What are the reasons why the government delegation is not in Nairobi for the talks? What are you hearing? I mean, you have sources in Juba.
Well, there is no formal communication on the status of the government delegation. 1 week has already been lost out of the 2 weeks that was directed from the communique that came out of the meeting of President Kiir and President Ruto. However, the information we receive from informal sources tend to indicate that the government delegation, the head of government delegation, was relieved of his duty. The president was supposed to nominate or appoint a new head of government delegation before the delegation would travel to Nairobi. And so, as it stands now, the delegation has not reached Nairobi, and until they come, the negotiations may not commence.
And given the 7 days you're left with now, because President Kiir and President William Ruto were, you know, straightforward saying that these negotiations should end within 2 weeks. Given the 7 days you have at hand right now, is it enough for you to iron out the sticky points, the Tumaini initiative?
Well, if no issues are raised, the 7 days would be enough to finalize the remaining issues. Majorly, it is the issue of governance and responsibility sharing, which has remained. But most of the protocols were finalized in the negotiations that took place for over 3 months when the process started.
Talk to me about the issues of governance, and we'll later go to responsibility sharing, because our listeners would want to know, what is it about governance that you are talking about it again? There is a government on the ground.
Well, yes, there is a government on the ground. However, the Tumaini initiative brings in a number of definitely new arrangements in terms of institutions that have been put in place, and also new actors, the parties that are negotiating from the side of the opposition. And so this is part of what they want to negotiate about and finalize agreement on this in terms of how these structures would be operationalized. And the negotiation would also then focus on the issue of responsibility sharing. And this means the roles that these actors who are from the opposition side would play once a final agreement is signed.
Rajab, you have been involved in the search for peace in South Sudan for quite a long time. I mean, I remember meeting you in Addis several times. Could you tell our listeners, why is it that every time a conflict is resolved, people want to negotiate for their personal interests? You were telling me the governance is to see how the other stakeholders who have been left out can be incorporated. Why should people negotiate about their personal interests, as opposed to the interests of the people of South Sudan, who have not seen peace for a long time?
Well, in my view, the agreements that have been negotiated are actually adequate enough to deliver peace in South Sudan if there is commitment and interest to implement them as agreed. Now, what is happening with regards to the negotiation in all of these aspects? My view is that it is not solely about the issue of personal interest, because for this particular process, when it commenced, there was a proposal that the whole thing should start immediately with the subject of governance and specifically responsibility sharing. However, this was pushed aside, that, you know, the issue of responsibility sharing does not constitute the core issues of the crisis in the country. And so the negotiations should focus on substantial issues of the crisis in the country. So until the protocols were finalized, most of the negotiations were actually on the issues that affect the country and also a focus on why agreements are not being implemented. And that explains why the element of responsibility sharing is the very last one that may be negotiated. And it's also understandable that this is a political settlement or political negotiation for a political agreement, and therefore the political actors may need to agree on how they locate themselves in this political process in order to ensure that they have a role to play in effecting the implementation. So that's how I would understand it.
And politics and peace are not brothers and sisters. Let's imagine the Tumaini Initiative ends up with a political settlement where the actors on the table, those who have been sitting on the fence, going back to Juba and offered ministerial positions. Would Rajab accept a ministerial position?
Well, at the moment, I would not accept a ministerial position.
Why? Why would you not accept a ministerial position that comes with the V8, air condition office, bodyguards, and money? Why would you not accept?
I have seen how people are frustrated in those positions. They are given those positions, and they are paralyzed in those positions. They are unable to deliver in those positions, and so there is really no value in chasing a V8 and a ministerial position. What I would think that would be important is to ensure that we demand of these parties who are the political actors to deliver on the commitments of the peace agreement. And I find it reasonable to be a voice for the population in demanding that, agreements are implemented to deliver peace in the country. And I am comfortable doing that because I have engaged so much with the citizens throughout the country as a civil society when I was in the country. And I have seen the need. I have seen how citizens yearn for peace. I have seen the difficulties they have gone through. And if there is anything I can do to help, it is not going to hold a ministerial position where you deliver nothing. I would rather hold a position of an activist to demand of those in power to make sure that these commitments are delivered on.
But Rajab, you were a state minister in the country. I mean, saying that you will continue to be the voice of the people, you left your activism job and became a minister.
Well, I was pushed to that response, to that duty without without chasing for it. The people in my constituency, in my county, were asked to nominate someone that would be appointed a state minister in Yambio, and they sent my name and told me that this was their choice and I should go and represent the county in the state government. And I went. Of course, I was convinced to go by the population, by the people in my county. I went and spent 3 months, and when the states were increased to 28, I went back to my work as an activist.
That's Rajab Mohandis, member of the People's Coalition for Civic Action. He spoke with me from the Kenyan capital, Nairobi, this past hour. The United States has sanctioned a commander of Sudan's paramilitary force, saying he played a leading role in the ongoing violence against civilians in West Darfur. The U.S. Department of Treasury said on Tuesday that Abdurrahman Juma Barakallah led the Rapid Support Forces campaign in West Darfur, committing human rights abuses against civilians, including sexual violence and ethnically motivated attacks. The United Nations and the international rights groups have said the atrocities in Sudan amount to war crimes. The Associated Press reports that the Treasury Department said Barakallah also played a key role in kidnapping and killing West Darfur Governor Khamis Abubakar. The war in Sudan broke out in April 2023. The UN says 20,000 people have been killed. You are listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, sales of second-hand clothes booms in Nigeria. Find out why after the break.
Hello, listener of South Sudan in Focus. We have an exciting new segment dubbed Words of Wisdom. We want to hear your thoughtful proverbs that echo through your community. This is another chance for you to share wisdom from your roots. All you need to do is record a proverb in a language of your choice, tell us its English translation and what it means. Keep it brief, authentic, and represent your community. Your recorded proverb shall be sampled on South Sudan in Focus every Wednesday. Send your recording via our WhatsApp number, +1 202 630 8011. That is +1 202 630 8011.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Our words of wisdom for today comes from the Zandeland in Western Equatorial State.
Hello, VOA News. This is Ndange William Raphael from Western Equatorial State, Yambio. My proverb for this Wednesday is Kodatise Ngaba Kerenyakasa. It simply means that being together is a big progress. When you come together, you make big change in the society, you make big change in the community, and you make people to be together in order to bring development in the society.
And the man who has been beating the drums and asking you to send your proverbs is with me in the studio here, Jackson Bunganyi. Welcome
John to this. Sanza, thank you so much for having me on the show today.
Now, when I've been listening to people's proverbs coming in, one proverb struck me from Unity State.
We do enjoy this proverb.
And this proverb goes like this, that we can, you and I in the studio here can agree to castrate a lion. But who will hold the legs?
So what does that mean?
It means, you know, you can criticize, but take the first step. Don't criticize and just keep quiet. Yeah, criticize definitely. And offer a solution.
Yes.
So if you want the lion to be unproductive, hold the legs.
Hold the legs. But nobody's going to hold the lion's eggs.
So I've been here. I never gave people proverbs in my mother tongue. Yeah. Some of them might think I don't speak my native language. I do. And I have a proverb in my Baka native language. It goes like this. It means if you entrust a mad person with a spear, he can kill a whole village.
The whole village.
So leadership is about trust.
Yes.
Tell us about your community.
Yeah, so I'm from Rwanda. My language is Kinyarwanda, and one of my favorite language, my favorite proverbs is Usekumuturanyi ukabyuka umusa. It means that you make fun of the neighbor and the next day you'll wake up looking like them.
Uh-huh. Yes, so when your neighbor is in trouble, help
don't,
them.
Don't laugh at them. Help them. Yes, because next day is going to be you.
That's a very wise
But not as powerful as holding the lion as you're castrating.
Well, that one is quite tough. And so we have been receiving proverbs, and that proverb is so far the
I love
best.
This segment.
And you can continue asking people to send their
Absolutely.
Proverbs.
Absolutely. Please send your proverbs here to South Sudan in Focus. I think it's such a nice way to engage with the listeners and just get an understanding of what their culture or their traditions tell them about how to lead their lives.
Thank you very much, Jackson Bunganyi. Let's go for more news. You are listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. At the annual United Nations Climate Change Meeting in Azerbaijan, developing regions, including Africa, are arguing for more finance to help them cope with the changing weather patterns. Darren Taylor reports from Johannesburg.
Delegates at the United Nations COP29 conference going on in Baku, Azerbaijan, have emphasized that developing regions, including Africa, are not responsible for the temperature rises that are causing suffering globally. Many scientists say Africa is bearing the worst of climate change, with droughts and floods causing crop failures and displacing millions of people across the continent. Scientists say burning oil, coal and gas to drive the economies of rich countries caused the high emission levels that have sparked global warming. Natalie Delpam, executive director of the Mo Ibrahim Foundation, says much of the developed world is out of touch with conditions in Africa.
In Africa, you still have 600 million people who don't have access to energy. No health, no education, no business, no jobs, no prospects. Whether it comes to the UN sustainable goals, we are totally off track. The current climate debate is still very much led by already developed countries for which energy transition doesn't have the same meaning as they have for their people.
Della Palm says renewable energy systems must be built from scratch in Africa, unlike in Europe and North America, where there's already infrastructure and big budgets. She's hoping COP29 delivers what she calls a sensible conversation about how developed countries can help Africa confront its specific challenges.
It's absolutely key to see Africa as a key potential player when it comes to building a green global economy. Without Africa's potential, without Africa's assets, without Africa's critical minerals, there will be no green global economy.
Africa's home to many of the minerals and metals needed to manufacture green energy systems, such as wind turbines and solar power stations. Della Palm says African countries should use this as leverage to negotiate more financing. But Rachel Antwi, head of sustainability at Ecobank, a pan-African banking group, says there are a lot of barriers to ramping up climate investment on the continent.
The top biggest one is lack of access to affordable finance. For example, for a bank like Ecobank, we've managed to raise about $500 million in the last 2 to 3 years. What we find is that the loan is always very expensive, and so very difficult for us to on-lend to our customers to be able to finance enough climate finance transactions. Also very expensive to lend to them, whether in local currency or even in foreign currency.
Antwi says even when there's money, there's not much preparation in Africa for climate adaptation and mitigation.
Another key problem that we also find is infrastructure gaps, right? Lack of proper infrastructure systems. Another point that is also very important that I find is a lack of bankable projects. So even if there is an interest and there's a small pool of money that we can use, we do not have enough ready-made projects that are scalable, that has investor interest or is attractive enough for the investors to be able to invest in.
Della Palm says fair climate financing in the form of trillions and not billions of dollars will solve a lot of these issues and is the only way to unlock Africa's potential for green industrialization. For VOA News, I'm Darren Taylor in Johannesburg.
From Johannesburg, we go to Abuja, where prices are rising. Nigerians are becoming creative in second-hand cloth shopping, locally known as Okrika, which is booming, offering affordable options. Gibson Emeka from Abuja looks at how this market is becoming a lifeline for many Nigerians.
Oye's 30-year-old Agata Okori, a successful businesswoman in Abuja, shop at upscale boutique, but with the pricing of new clothing more than doubling, she now turned to second-hand shop for more affordable option. Okori says thrift clothing let her keep her style without breaking the bank.
I moved from buying brand new clothes to buying thrifts because, one, aside the cost, thrift wears are more durable. I discovered thrift wears are more durable. And like we all know, brand new clothes are quite on the high side. They are quite expensive, way more than thrift wears. That's why they switched to thrift.
Okori is not alone. Once reserved for low-income shoppers, thrift shopping has become mainstream. Known locally as Okrika, thrift markets from Lagos to Abuja are boosting. Economist Isaac Botin notes that for many, thrift shopping is a necessary response to inflation and policy that leave them stretching every dollar.
So they do all of this as the means of survival because the government is not helping, the economic situation is not helping, the federal government policies are not favorable to consumers. So it is two ways, a means of affordability for the consumer and a means of boosting sales for the seller.
Andrew Eze, who is 32, have seen this shift in fashion firsthand. When prices on new clothing surge, he switched to selling thrift wear in Abuja famous Nyanya Okrika market. Eze says this has helped his business stay afloat.
A time came that the brand new became so high, that is the amount, the price in the market is so high that many cannot afford to get it at that price.
Studies show Nigeria imports more than 500,000 tons of second-hand clothing yearly. But even this alternative feel the pinch as rising import costs push some thrift vendors to raise prices. For many, like civil servant Chris Olofu, this means further compromise on quality and style to stay on budget.
Because in those days that economy was very good, we used to buy from high-profile boutique. Because there's a way we classify ourselves, living an ostentatious life. But because of the economy, the situation in the economy now, it has made me at least to cut my clothes according to my size. But no, if the economic condition improves, I have to stop. I have to go back to my normal fashion.
Experts agree that thrift shopping will likely remain popular as long as economic pressure persists. This trend impacts Nigeria local textile industry due to competition with affordable imported clothing. Button believes investing in local textile production could eventually make a new clothing more affordable. But until then, thrift shopping remains essential.
Government needs to invest in the sector, subsidize their operations, help to relieve the burden, the cost of production, burden of the cost of production on the manufacturer. That will translate to lower cost of production and cost of sales, which is the real affordability.
As Nigeria adapts to the changing economy, thrift market provide affordable option. Gibson Emeka, VOA News, Abuja, Nigeria.
That's all from us this Wednesday, November 13, 2024. We now leave you with Oliver Mutukuzu and the song Todi.
What shall we do? Sinzija.
What shall we do?
Been listening to Oliver Mutukuzu with the song Todi. For more on our programs, visit www.voaafrica.com. I'm your host, John Tanza, on this live broadcast from Studio 14 here in Washington. On behalf of our producer, Kwame Ofori, and engineer, Rob Macklin, we wish you a lovely evening. Remember to join us again tomorrow for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
What shall we do?
Oh, today.